Hey everyone, we are live in Paris KubeCon for a very, very special edition of all things cloud native and more on TechStrong Gang. All right, we're back here. We're live. If you can't hear the roar of what's going on this show floor, it's because our mics are really good. But it is a raucous, you like that word? It's a raucous crowd here at TechStrong, we are TechStrong, at KubeCon in Paris. And it's been an interesting first day. Mike, I know you were at a whole bunch of the conferences and keynotes.
I went to the keynotes, the press conferences, and you know, there were 12,000 of my closest new friends at the keynote this morning, so that was pretty cool.
I think it's close to, well, maybe all, there's 13,000 people here, so yeah, probably 12,000. Mitch and I have been holding down the fort here doing interviews, and we've seen a few trends already, I think, starting to emerge. Some of them are probably to be expected, some maybe not. The first thing I wanted to talk about is the continuing maturation of the cloud native platform or the cloud native ecosystem, much as we talk about like with DevOps and DevOps Next, right? Where we're seeing less point solutions that you need to cobble together to more cohesive platforms. And it's almost platforms within platforms. Kind of like nested Russian dolls, right? And, you know, a lot of the interviews that we did today, Mitchell, that was the theme. And it goes with, you know, what is tomorrow's, today's product is tomorrow's feature. And we're seeing that a lot. I'm hearing it from the vendors and people we're talking to.
You know, it's also another parallel with DevOps is, it isn't cloud native, literally microservices and containers and just that, right? And as narrowly as you want to define it. It's the ecosystem of developing cloud applications, ranging from OpenShift as cloud native to, Kubernetes and these things, but it's also the platforms that support all of that. And I think that's what everyone's realized is, this is so complex, you can't do point solutions all over, up and down the stack, horizontally, vertically. It's crazy. There's so many variables.
I think we were talking about this earlier, but how much of this show now is IT ops people and the back end of the DevOps people versus when we first started coming to this, it was mostly developers.
All developers.
That was just a couple of years ago. It wasn't primarily developers.
But, you know, many of the interviews I did today, it was about taking the load off developers, making it easy for developers. Whether it's through using AI or ML or just better designed programs for them, it was about making life easier for developers.
There's a tension here, though, because there's an irony in the whole thing. Originally, Kubernetes was driven by the so-called full stack developers, of which there are not many. And then they convinced the IT ops people, somewhat unwillingly, to embrace Kubernetes because it has standard APIs. And they finally got it. But now the rest of the developer community is dragging its heels because the abstraction layer is not a lot of fun yet. It's not, it's still
Kubernetes
hard.
Kubernetes is not easy.
It's hard for the developers still. And so I think that the next wave of this thing is we got to get to another abstraction above Kubernetes just that the developer sees so they don't see all this underlying stuff. There's a growing WASM community that's kind of banging that drum saying that WASM's going to be the new front end for Kubernetes and that WASM will replace containers with something that's more of a lighter weight component model that runs faster. It's all integrated. There's a couple of announcements around that today and a couple tomorrow. But that's going to take a while. WASM is early. I mean, WASM doesn't really have a vendor ecosystem that's meaningful yet. It has a couple of players.
That's two players.
And it might be 2-3 years before WASM is fully, you know, enterprise ready.
It'll be longer than that. You know, speaking, I'm sorry, go ahead,
I was just saying the irony is Kubernetes is everywhere. It's not just developers and not just ops. It's in all these products that are being run in the cloud, right? Whether you're running OpenShift, but you're running it on Kubernetes, or you're running an object store database that's interfacing through Kubernetes. It's all managed through Kubernetes. So in a way, we're, I don't know if we're making our problem harder or easier. Maybe we're building up the expertise to operate these things, but it's sort of proliferating the same technology.
I will tell you that there are certain vendors that are, they have a credibility problem, right? Because they've been running around saying that we abstract Kubernetes and we'll create the development environment for you. And yet, you talk to every developer out there and they're like, that stuff's still too complicated. So all that talk about developer productivity, cloud native, and those platforms, something's not connecting. There's a piece missing.
So, you know, you talk about containers and Kubernetes. I spoke with Scott Johnston, CEO of Docker, about this. And I will tell you, Docker pivoted in 2019, I think we all know this, to really focus on developer. And they're trying to make it easy for the developer not to deal with Kubernetes, right? By using some of these new Docker tools. I don't know if abstracting Kubernetes out is the answer.
I would tell you one of the first vendors to announce support for WASM was Docker.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, really? Okay, full circle. Number one.
There you go. But I think what it is, though, you know, it reminds me when cloud first came out, right? Our friend Rich Mogul had a term called cloud washing security, which was taking security and just moving it up to the cloud, but it wasn't really designed from the ground up.
I can down the
right,
floor.
Right. I think what we've seen is cloud native wash developer tools, where we just kind of slammed Kubernetes onto it and all that entails, and said, okay, developer, you got to develop in this environment. And now I think companies like Docker and some of the other companies we've interviewed here today are saying, no, that's not the right approach. We don't need to shove Kubernetes down their throats. And they, whether it's an abstraction layer, AI, more automation, what have you.
Serverless, that's another option.
Developers want to write code. Everything you do that takes them away from writing code because they're doing something else or waiting on something else ruins their productivity. So I think that's the focus.
I mean, when I look at Docker Build and I listen to them, to me that sounds like a DevOps platform. They're just not calling it that. It sits up in the cloud.
I did speak to him about that.
DevOps,
he had a very interesting answer. You'll need to watch my interview to find out. But yeah, you know, they are definitely looking to shake up the CI/CD market to make it easier for developers.
You know, another big theme, not unexpectedly, but it's platform engineering. As well as AI, kind of the two bookends of every conversation has at least one or both of those in those, at least AI. It's interesting too that, you know, platform engineering, there's different ways, segments of what we think of that is. One of them is the developer portal, an internal developer portal. There's also a school of thought now around, well, that's kind of a bookshelf or a shopping shelf for all of the pre-built patterns, things, configurations, tools, et cetera. But there's still, it doesn't eliminate a lot of the work that it takes. It just kind of puts a bit of a garden around it. And maybe we need more cloud development environments that are kind of built for you to be productive.
Maybe. I was talking to a fellow who was one of these agile framework people and, you know, hardcore, and he was not having the platform engineering conversation because he was like, the whole point in his mind of agile was I get to choose my tools. I want to be like in charge of that. And now you're telling me that the man is back from central IT with platform engineering and
I'm here to help.
And telling me how I'm going to like do things. And he's like, thanks, but no thanks.
Well, standing behind him was the waterfall person, right? Like, well, wait a minute.
Yeah, maybe.
So, yeah, that, you know, I always try not to discuss politics and religion. Anyway, hey, let's take a break. We'll be back with Textron Gang in a minute.
DevOps.com is the number one online destination for DevOps education and community building. DevOps.com covers all aspects of DevOps, including DevOps best practices and tools, DevOps culture, DevSecOps, business impact, continuous testing, continuous delivery, and more. DevOps.com has the largest collection of original DevOps content, featuring breaking news, blog posts, podcasts, and more. Visit www.devops.com to learn more. DevOps.com, where the world meets DevOps.
All right, folks, we're back at KubeCon, and now we're going to talk about, well, surprisingly, AI. You can't even leave your house today without somebody accosting you about their AI thoughts. But here at the show, we're talking about how Kubernetes has emerged as almost like the de facto platform for AI. But I got to say, they were going so much out of their way to like say that and to, you know, invite the AI community into the cloud native community that I always get a little suspicious. And you talk to the data scientists and they're like, you know, they have the same complaints the developers have. They're like, this stuff is hard. I don't want to see this stuff. And, you know, they have their own little MLOps frameworks for building the models. And they're like, Kubernetes is hard, but I don't really want an IT ops guy in the middle of that conversation. So, but at the same time, they're not going to be able to do anything without it. So I give Priyanka Sharma some props. She was saying during the press conference, we got to get that DevOps mindset into this conversation because people have to have empathy for what other folks are doing. And she was like, we're going to have to create some new framework. She didn't have a name for it, or she had one, but it was kind of like Dev MLOps, SecOps thing, and it just didn't roll off the tongue.
See, that I can get behind because DevOps isn't about a tool or technology, right? And you're talking about how do you solve work problems, work streams, flow of work, and the different characteristics of it, what it like to manage a model or build an LLM or support the data, the training, all that kind of stuff. Yeah, those are unique things. They don't literally fall into a CI/CD pipeline flow. So how do you meld those in? That's not Kubernetes. That's how work happens, and how do we build platforms that help multiple things work on their own path and also coordinate where they need to, but people working together, more importantly.
I think it goes back to what we said before. If AI is going to make people's lives and jobs easier, if it's going to free up the developer to write more code, it's going to free up the ops guy to deploy faster and better, all of the naysayers in the world don't amount to a hill of beans, as Humphrey Bogart would say, right? Because it's doing what we need it to do. Will it do that is, I think, the $64 million question.
I'm reaching way back. I remember the day when the data center people came over to the new client server group and said, yeah, that's not a departmental computer. We need to put that in the data center.
Right.
I mean, that's kind of what that reminds me.
It does go back to that.
I mean, we've seen this story over and over.
Some of that going on here, too. Like what you were saying of the platform engineering was even the AI itself. I mean, most of our laptops have GPUs in them, right? They're not, you know, these monster GPUs that we're seeing in the cloud AI kind of things, but you know, where does that AI computation, if you will, take place? Do we need to be connected back to the cloud, or is it on our laptops?
Yeah, most of the heavy, you know, GPU AI stuff can't be done locally, right? On any sizable amount, you got to do it.
Yeah,
in some farm.
So on a previous show, I think it was you was talking about, we were talking about whether an AI model is an artifact that fits in the pipeline and can you manage it like any other artifact, or is it on some orthogonal track that goes alongside. You've been at the show, still got the same opinion, or is that evolving?
I think it's, you know, traditional physics and quantum computing. You know, they're kind of like the AI never has an estate until you observe it. At least it, our understanding of how it fits into the workflow is still pretty ephemeral. And I think a lot of that is just knowing, well, we know how to manage models, you know, for expert systems, et cetera. But training LLMs and protecting data, there's so many things we're learning. Maybe the big enterprises have been doing it long enough. I think for us, I think of it as the common factor is it's a data management problem. It's about the data for the model. The model is just a construct of how it uses that data. So we can pick up maybe some things from the database world and from data management platforms. But I think there's a lot to be done to figure that out. That's just my opinion.
I can't make up my mind as to whether or not AI will force a restructuring of the way IT or teams are organized, because today we have developers and data engineers and the DBAs, and then we got the data scientists and the security people. And are those separation of concerns that we just need to figure out how to work more closely together, or do we need to throw the whole thing up again and kind of figure out a whole new model?
I think you know the answer to that. They're going to form new groups because the manager's got to have a title too that's got AI in it, right?
So that has nothing to do with the problem.
Yeah, it's not the problem we're talking
about. No, this is not a problem.
That's about the resume.
It's culture.
Boy, we sure dipped into sarcasm there. My fault.
But you know, raise your hand if you're surprised that AI is going to have a big role here, a big presence, you know? I don't see any hands out there in TV land. Anyway, moving on from AI, let's talk about our next topic right after this.
And we're back, and Jim Zemlin, who runs the Linux Foundation, showed up at a press conference and decided he wanted to kick the can pretty hard. So he said that the Linux Foundation is looking into some way to create a open data foundation, which would make sure that there was always reliable, interesting open data for AI folks to train their models on, because in the wake of the disclosures around OpenAI and all these lawsuits, everybody's putting their data behind some sort of licensing agreement, and now we won't be able to innovate because we won't have access to enough data. Of course, he said he wasn't against people licensing data, but he didn't exactly say what you would get if you gave up your data and threw them into this foundation, or if there was any kind of prize at the end of the day. But I know we've talked about this in some other shows, but what's your take?
So let me be very clear what he's really saying.
Okay.
Ripping out the wholesome goodness of open source.
School or whatever.
What he's really saying is, hey, we can't train good AI without a good AI without using your data. And damn, how dare you will make us want to pay for your data. And so we're looking for a bunch of schnooks who are going to give us their data so we could train our AI, so that people using said AIs can then use your data to make their data and their products better. I don't buy it. I think that's
the only time it works is when you anonymize
move.
It, right?
I mean, what?
The only time that kind of works is when you anonymize data to share with other people.
I mean, because I mean, almost by its very nature, you're saying, yeah, no, you can take my bit data. It's not really valuable.
Yeah.
So what am I giving you, the dregs of data?
You're giving me government data.
Government data, exactly. And even the government's not going to want you to do that. Now, if this Open Data Consortium or Foundation or whatever would somehow make it worth my while that I can create my own LLM, not just on my data, but all the other people's open data, and someone who doesn't contribute data cannot use that Open Data Foundation to make their LLM better, well, then maybe there's a reason for me to do that.
Well, part of me says, try to put something together. If it's valuable, it'll grow legs and become something. And if
I think, but you got to have that value prop.
You got to start figuring out what
that is. Why would I give
you
my data? Right. What am I getting out of that?
I confess I'm having something of an existential crisis about all this. Because, you know, as a person who generally writes for a living or creates video, I feel like I'm on the cusp of creating content for machines, which in turn create more content. And then, you know, I'm basically writing for machines as much, maybe more so than humans.
It's like training the outsourcers to take your job, right?
Yeah, but here's the kicker too. Those machines are then creating content that humans will consume, and you don't get any credit or comp for that.
Now, yeah. I have read some articles about, I guess, in the news world, some of the bigger
are making deals with OpenAI,
new licensing deals, and now they're thinking for AI.
So I think that's what's going to happen.
That seems to me the more logical.
I mean, look at graphics, for instance, right? Whether you have, you know, there's any number of graphics clearing houses. It's pretty well settled today. If you're running a reputable site, you're not just, you know, cut and pasting off the web other people's graphics. I think we need to have a similar come to Jesus moment around people's data
and
for AI.
And of course, there's lawsuits at the bottom of this where folks are talking about fair use versus copyright. And, you know, a lot of the OpenAI folks in particular are trying to say that, well, we just scraped your websites and it's all fair use, so it's all good. But I'm like, you know, if you're going to scrape my website to do that, I will put everything behind a reg wall. And I will never create any more content to train your AI model, because ultimately we have families to feed, and stealing is morally wrong. I don't care if it's legally right, but it's morally wrong.
Let's
draw a parallel that doesn't work, and that's open telemetry. Is it the data that they're sharing, or is it the format of the data? It's getting the data. That's been an extremely successful open source project, but it's, you know, it's what you do with the data that you collect, not submitting your data to some open source.
There's got to be a good value prop for the people who submit their data.
A lot of work to figure that out. I agree.
Agreed.
So other than that, it'll be successful.
We'll see.
My union rep.
Do you have a union rep?
No.
Oh, good.
We need to form one, clearly.
Just what I need. I don't have enough on my plate.
You have your card? I don't have my card.
Anything else you want to add to the discussion?
No, this has only been day one, and you can imagine we've had a lot to talk about on the first day, so I can't wait to see what tomorrow
will be. We'll be a lot smarter by Friday.
And remember, we are streaming live. It is on Paris time, so if you happen to be in Europe or Asia, it works for you. But then we're replaying that stream later in the day for our friends back home in North America or South America. So you can, if you can't make it out here to Paris, if you've gone, you can follow along with us here on TechStrong. And it's going to be a great week for Mitchell and Mike and myself. It's a wrap.
SecurityBoulevard.com is the leading resource for news, analysis, and education on challenges facing the cybersecurity industry. SecurityBoulevard.com covers all aspects of cybersecurity, including data security, DevSecOps, cloud security, application security, network security, security threats, and more. SecurityBoulevard.com has the largest selection of security content, featuring breaking news, blog posts, podcasts, and more. Visit www.securityboulevard.com to learn more. SecurityBoulevard.com, home of Security Bloggers Network.